video presentation you are about to see contains scenes of a sexually explicit and graphically violent nature. It is not intended for, nor should it be viewed by persons under the age of 18. If you feel you will be offended by the material presented herein, it is strongly suggested that you leave the viewing area at this time. Remember, you have been warned.
And we are back, episode 43, Underground Espionage. Tara, how's it going?
It's going great, Mike. Thanks for asking.
It is going great because we are just in tortured soul land. And boy, it's a land that we are happy to be in.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely happy. It's full of tits and murder and people that just seem fun to hang out with.
You know what? This is definitely a crew I want to hang with. So, yes, our main feature today will be the Tortured Soul Trilogy, lovingly released on Blu-ray by Saturn's Core. We are a little late this week. I think I'm going to put this up right after we record it, Tara. So it'll go up late on Saturday. I think that's just the way we're going to do it.
If we don't say what day it's coming out, it's not really late. We just kind of have the idea we just kind of like have it somewhere in the neighborhood of Wednesday to Sunday is when it comes.
Yeah, I mean,
definitely not on a Monday or Tuesday.
We did establish that when we first started, we thought we'd be more consistent with the day, and then we just decided, nope. It'll just come out when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need a disclaimer. Knows what day of the week it is? Like, I don't know what today
is. I don't know.
It's been
a wacky week schedule-wise. Today, we woke up to a set by Einsters in Der Neubauten.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds like they started up again.
Yeah, it's nice to be woken up by just general hammering. It just sounded like they're just running around the apartment downstairs, hammering every surface they can find. I hope it helps. I really hope it helps. But I really enjoy being able to jump freely. Like, I could do a jump rope in here now.
Yeah.
If I was so inclined, if I owned a jump rope, I could do that.
Yeah, yeah. It does sound like they might be starting up again, so there may be some hammering or moving of objects caught on these microphones, or maybe not. I don't know.
Who can tell?
Who can tell? Tara, what has been going on? What's good?
What
with
am I
you?
Excited about?
What are you
what
excited
have I been
about?
Waiting, like saving to tell you about? Until I can tell you right now when I have you as a captive
you
audience.
You have me. I am here, Tara. Let me and the people know what.
Very excited about these monkeys that are loose in St. Louis. There's a little park in St. Louis that had an unknown number of vervet monkeys that were spotted in a park, and they have been at large and I wouldn't say really running amok, but running about. And so for the last like week and a half, 2 weeks, officials have been trying to confirm these monkey sightings because people are sending them photos. But then as it's gotten out in the area, people have started using AI to create different like monkey sightings and report monkey sightings. So it's caused a bit of chaos and they don't know where the monkeys are and they never found them. They think that the monkeys are no longer at large, Mike.
Wait. All right. What?
Yeah.
So how many monkeys?
You know what?
Did they know?
In my heart.
Like a barrel of monkeys?
A big old barrel. No. Okay, these are cat-sized vervet monkeys. They have that kind of like tan, golden fur with a little white ring around their face and black faces. They're small.
I can picture.
Small little true monkeys. You know, I will say, I don't know if I've talked about it on this particular podcast, but sometimes you hang out with people that are like, I don't know, anthropologists, and you may say monkey and ape interchangeably, depending on whichever is funnier.
This is a classic terror story.
You may refer to, I won't be too specific, but you may be hanging out with some anthropologists, and you may refer to a chimpanzee as like, look at that little monkey there. And then they're like, actually, it's an ape. And then everybody has a whole conversation and tries to like really, really hone in their like great ape, like whatever thing. Like, come on,
yeah.
Monkey, chimp, ape, like at this point, I'm literally talking about monkeys, but also it's like, if you're hanging out in a casual setting, does anybody really need to like be all like whatever didactic about fucking apes and monkeys?
And then it's just funny beer? When you have people like that doing that, then it just makes it more fun to then keep saying
troll
it wrong.
Them. So I will always say it wrong and we'll say it wrong 100%. You know who would agree? Mike from Tortured Soul would agree that I can say monkey, I can say ape, I can say whatever the hell I want to. Now, Mike, these little guys, I kind of want to show you a picture of what they look like so you can just see how cute that's what they are.
Yeah, that's what I pictured.
So, but the
yeah.
reason that they can't figure out how many monkeys there are is because they're pretty elusive, they're quick, and they don't really like approach people much. So they can't really tell how many there are. And I really wanted to find this quote because it's exciting to me, like, in reading about this, because I've been trying to get, like, constant updates and just reading as many articles as I can see about it. But one weird thing that I saw, though, I won't quote it directly. Let me see if it, let's see, this is it. And it says that owning a primate other than a human being is illegal in all formats. Like, they did like a public health warning.
Wait,
like,
wait.
Okay.
So
I
was trying to owning a primate other than a human being. So you can own a human being.
That's what I was so confused about, because they did. St. Louis issued a statement saying that most exotic animals, most primates are illegal to possess. It said excluding a human being, and the way they made it sound in their public health warning, it was like, you can own a human being or keep a human being in captivity. And I just thought it was so funny that I was like trying to save it so I could show you that. But in my haste, I don't think I took a proper
screenshot. Look, I think we should take advantage of that law and maybe, you know, get ourselves
a human
being. Human
being in captivity. That's fine, as long as it's not an ape or a monkey. But yeah, it was, anyway, I really enjoyed it. But I also like the chaos involved.
Oh, wait, so they haven't been found? They're just running around?
No, and they think that people have now, they're like, the most likely tale at this point is that they have been... Somebody's keeping them, and that's why they issued all these public
health warnings. I guess, but I mean,
warnings.
Like, it feels kind of crazy.
I wish I could find their statement right now. Oh man, it's wait. Maybe pause it real quick, and I'll get it. Oh, you're not gonna pause.
No. Right, I'm not gonna do that.
Okay. Here we go. It's unclear whether the monkeys came where the monkeys came from. I found it, or if they were someone's escaped exotic pets. The city ordinance prohibits keeping most exotic animals as pets, including all non-human primates. So you can keep
exotic humans
as pets if you
care
to do so. So that gave me a really good chuckle. So, they think that somebody has captured the monkeys.
This might be some
monkeys.
Joe. Maybe it's some Joe Exotic stuff. You know what I mean?
But also, like, I mean, you know, I'm torn. Like, if a pigeon came to me, or like a some other type of bird, I would be like, yeah, Mike, we got to keep this, right?
No.
But under no circumstance would I be like, I shall have this monkey.
No,
he is my buddy.
It sounds.
I find them terrifying, yeah, especially the little ones, because they're even faster.
Yeah, no, hell
they're
no.
Scary.
Scary. The upkeep seems insane. The destruction.
The
and
destruction
then they
level.
Can just turn
the
on
danger
you any second.
Level. Like, I mean, do not want to, like.
Have we all seen Planet of the Apes?
Yeah, I mean, we all know about that lady whose chimp ripped her face off.
Don't
like,
need it.
I don't need any of that. But even the little ones, just like mice. Like, rats don't bother me much when they're like fat, slow rats. But I really, those little quick, tiny mice, they freak me out.
Yeah,
so if I had a little fast monkey, like, hopping all over the place, it would scare the shit out of me.
The quickness is kind of, like, the worst part of it.
Yeah, I was...
About those mice.
I was really disappointed in myself once I was, you know, like, walking around in a mouse, like, at home. It wasn't at home. It was in a store. And a mouse ran out in front of me. And I literally, like, jumped in the air and squealed. It was like, and, like, tried to find a high place to get to. And I was disappointed in myself that I had that reaction. But I don't, rats, I don't care about them. But those mice, man, they freak me out. Anyway, okay, so the monkey thing has made me really excited. And then the other thing caused by the California rains, in addition to a lack of strawberries and blueberries, which were damaged by the excessive rain in California, it is now the highest number of hospitalizations by skullcap mushrooms on record.
Okay, so what do you mean? Like, by people ingesting them?
Yeah, skullcap mushrooms are really deadly, and they can kill you, right?
Why are people eating them?
because people forage for mushrooms all the time, and they're dangerous, and they're generally not that prominent. But right now, due to the rain, they have become abundant. So there is a warning now of buying mushrooms from farmers markets or foraging on your own. Even really experienced,
I don't care what they're called, because you know what? Fungi. I never understood that when
fungologist. That fungologist. I know that, the like, name for this. Our friend was one.
That 10, that like 10 years or whatever, the people who, the foraging for mushrooms trend, like I was like, dude, that just, you are asking for hospitalization.
Yeah, but it just depends on it. Because like, these are the real ones. These are the mushrooms that really get you into trouble. And like, of all the cautionary tales, like these are the ones that really are gonna get you. And see, Mike, here's what they look like. They look like just a plain,
dude,
white,
I would never eat
mushroom.
Just a wild. I just would never do that.
Yeah, the angel mushroom, the angel of death. It has lots of names. For these mushrooms, but a whole family was poisoned. Like, and it destroys
skull
your liver.
Skullcap, the meaning of pain, the way that I want you to die.
So they really look like edible mushrooms. But if you don't remember, our friend who was a mycologist, used to babysit our dog and would take our little Steve Perry the dachshund on
morel
hunts. Yeah,
I just feel like
morels don't look like toxic mushrooms. I mean, they're pretty distinctive.
But I just feel like I feel like if you're an amateur,
you shouldn't just be running around picking mushrooms.
Yeah, you're asking for death.
Yeah, there's been 35 mushroom cases, this season. So how wild is that?
No.
So everybody, watch your ass.
Hey,
if you don't know what you're doing, don't forage about for mushrooms.
Much like,
especially not in Hollywood.
Much like getting stalked by a slasher in a forest. Much like drowning on a cruise. These are things that you and I, Tara, do not need to worry about, because
we will never be
in that position.
I've done it. I've foraged for mushrooms. I just have only foraged for like things that don't look like
all
that.
All right.
Look,
all right.
Full disclosure, I don't want to be dishonest, but only I was with a professional, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. A professional. It's fine. That's different. Well.
Yeah, especially not the mushrooms here. Ugh, can you imagine? They're probably just like growing on the, you know, massive amounts of dog shit that people leave everywhere, because everyone in LA owns a dog now and they shit everywhere. And they're like, isn't that cute?
They definitely do.
Anyway.
Well, look, I am excited to discuss these movies. I'm excited. I never like to fully announce, especially when it's an interview, because sometimes scheduling things happen. But if all goes to plan, next week's episode will be an interview. So we'll look forward to that. But I'll tell you who I'd like to interview. I'd like to interview Michael W. Johnson, because I think we may have found the crown jewel of Saturn's core thus far in the Tortured Soul trilogy set.
I mean, this was just a thrill. Mike, you base coated it before I watched it.
Yes, I've seen between watching it, watching these movies with commentary, watching with you, I've seen all of these movies at least 3 times at this point.
And have any of them gotten tedious or old?
No, not at all. In fact, I feel that I enjoy them even more the more I watch them.
Yes.
The more I think about, you know, the guy behind them, the interviews, just his the whole story of this company that put out these movies,
the impetus, the vibe. Do you want to kind of sum up what we've got with Mike?
Well, so we have Michael W. Johnson, Mike, as he is in these movies.
A gentleman who was working in Minneapolis in a meatpacking factory.
Well, he worked multiple jobs, you know.
During the first film, he said it was a meatpacking
factory. Oh, no, the Coke bottling plant.
Oh, the Coke bottling plant.
You know, you might have been meatpacking for the first movie, Coke bottling for second, for the third.
I believe that I'm
a journeyman.
Correct.
A journeyman.
A man of many trades.
Yeah,
but
I think you are right.
I do believe it was the meatpacking, because that's where he got access to the guts the most.
You are right.
So it was meatpacking first. Then Coke bottling, then at a hotel, a man of many trades. However, a man who can network and utilize what's available to him, including his coworkers, and then, you know, kind of rally them into, wrangle them into a shot on video film.
Yes, yes. And the many ladies in the movies, you know, some coming from the strip clubs that he would frequent after his coke bottling shift, some coming from ads and city pages that he references many times. This is all Minneapolis and suburban Minneapolis in the 80s and 90s. And then the final one in the early 2000s. But he started in the 80s just making Super 8, making just real, real backyard kind of stuff. And he's just a journeyman. He was a big horror fan.
A passion for metal music, a passion for horror films.
Yeah, he said he talked about seeing Night of the Living Dead in the theaters, Texas Chainsaw in the theaters. I believe he spent some time in the Army, could have been the Marines. Spent some time in some sort of service and came back and was just always into metal and into horror. And you can see, especially in these movies, between him and Kevin K. Smith, who would also go by Stephen Castle, their homes, which just have tons of vinyl, CDs, tapes. We'll get into all this stuff.
But also the homes that are so, like, I mean, it makes me miss the Midwest and having a house with a basement, having, like, the space to have, like, a film poster collection, of those things. We can get into
all of
this. We're
going to get into all of this. But, yeah, so he would, you know, just make these movies. He's made a lot of movies. And it was really, really got into full swing with the Tortured Soul movies. In fact, he did make what, in my memory, is the first shot-on-video movie I saw, Tales from the Cannibal Side. And it was one I saw back in, it was either high school or maybe, you know, yeah, it would have been in high, it would have been the end of high, it would have been, you know, in the end area of high school. And I do remember, you know, it just being like, ooh, it felt like I was watching something I shouldn't be watching.
Yeah, and you probably were.
And the shot on video nature lent it to that. It was definitely something I had never really seen before, at least in that context. I mean, I was going to the Chicago Underground Film Festival. It would have been around that time. So it was when I was getting exposed to all this stuff. Yes. So seeing some of this, but something like Tales
from
the Cannibal
Side. Young Mike getting exposed.
Exactly. Something like Tales from the Cannibal Side felt more, there was a more pornographic feel to it. There was a seediness to it and a trashiness to it that I remember being like, I remember feeling, because it was definitely at home when I saw it at my parents' home, because I remember feeling like, ooh, I should not. They
let
shouldn't
them see that you're watching this.
They shouldn't see me watching this. That's what it felt like.
You're like,
right?
Yeah, this isn't up when they're in bed. Watch this.
And, like watching a porn or something.
Yeah.
And the Tortured Soul movies, especially the first one. I mean, but all of them have elements of it.
Yeah.
Have that feel of like, ooh, I shouldn't watch this around like polite company.
I mean, all three have, you know, some very, very like, close nipple. You don't see a shot on video nipple.
I mean, the first
as much
the
as you
opening,
do in all three.
The opening
of
scene
films.
Of the first Tortured Soul is just a straight up pussy.
Yeah, yeah. You get a lot of meaty.
In fact, the two first scenes in the first Tortured Soul are two full on are two chicks masturbating in their pussies just right in the camera.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Right away, this is something different. And when I pop this on, that's been, again, as I think we discussed last week or one of the weeks this year, the big thing this year is limiting the viewing to discs that are in the shrink wrap. So this is one that this has been out for a few years, but it was one we got in the recent sale. And so I was like, cracked open that shrink wrap. And, you know, I like to base coat things a lot of times, just so that when thinking that we're going to do them for the podcast, and then I kind of like having the base coat and then watching it through your eyes, etc.
Well, at times, you know, again, much like this, like there are times when you can just watch a film and follow along and understand what's going on. This is not necessarily one of those situations.
I don't. I disagree.
I mean, you know what's going. I mean, you know that there's, look, you know there's murder. You know who the you know who the hero is. You know who the bad guy is. You know who the murderer is.
So I guess it does get a little hazier as the movies go on.
But the details of like where they are, why they're doing it, are not necessarily clear. Like, you know, there are two deranged murderers. They're out to get some women, and you know that you know Mike is out to stop them or avenge the women that they have killed. Well, and that's kind of where that ends.
Well, Tara, you actually already did bring up a good point, because you know what, you are right, and I said I may have signaled you because I've watched these movies now so many times. But you are right, actually it is, you don't actually realize the two killer thing is kind of does come out of nowhere, and then it does get continue to confuse. But since we have watched these movies, Tara, and really for the benefit of the listeners, I think what we're going to do right now is hear from Michael Johnson, Mike in the movie himself, who gives a very incredible, precise recap of all the events that lead up to part three. In part three, he tells the entire story of Torture Soul 1 and 2.
Yes.
Clearly, distinctly, and maybe that's why I feel so confident I know what's happening. So, yes. Tara, for the listeners, let's have him summarize Tortured Soul 1 and 2 that lead up to the events of Tortured Soul 3.
Tell me about Ike and the killings.
Where do you want me to start?
From the beginning.
It seemed like it was only yesterday. But in reality, it was 7 years ago that the awful killing started. I remember it was a hot August night when I first heard about the first victim. Several girls from a massage parlor were found naked and dead. Then several days later, a couple were found, mutilated and gutted, with their insides tore out. Now this really baffled the Minneapolis Police Department. I warned my girlfriend to be careful, but she did not listen and vanished also. A lucky break came when my friend Mike had left work and noticed his co-worker Steve, who was fired later that day at his tree trimming job. Mike saw him grab Jill in the park, throw her in the trunk, and head her with a crowbar and drive off. He called me right away. We both went our separate ways. Mike met with a quick death, a machete to the head. There I found out Steve had a brother, the sick and retarded brother, Ike, who enjoyed torturing women, then eating their flesh. Ike had surprised me and locked me in the bathroom, but several years in jail taught me how to get out of there real quick. I found me a weapon and then walked through the house. Ike came upon me, and I gave him a sickle to the gut. He fell and collapsed. Then I came face to face with Steve. He was a big, strong son of a bitch, but I gave it all I had, and we fought to the death. His death. I was arrested later for the killings, but due to lack of evidence, I was released. The cop who arrested me was later found dead with his three children. An APB was put out to arrest me for the killings. I knew Ike was back. I kidnapped a young girl and held her hostage for a while until I could meet up with a friend and get a pistol. When I was gone, I could kill the young girl and killed my friend Mark. I knew Ike was killing anyone close to me, so I headed to Pittsburgh to save my sister. But I was too late. She was already dead. Finally, I met up with Ike. We fought long and hard, but I finally killed him. Or so I thought.
So So, I mean, look, we're going to still get into all this, but it really sums it up.
But it was great. Like, in watching Tortured Soul 1 and watch, I was like, you know, you said, no, these ladies, this house, it's supposed to be, you know, a massage parlor.
And I was like, wait, what?
I'm like, why do you think that? Yeah. What would lead you to believe that?
And I couldn't remember because I'd watched the interviews, I watched commentary, and then I remembered, oh, is this recap?
And you think it's the, and you were like, I guess it's all the commentary. And like, Mike, you kept telling me about like all these plot twists. You're like, no, these two are brothers. Oh, no. He's, he's the demented killer, but he's brain damaged. Like, and you're
the
telling,
retarded killer,
yes, that
by the way.
Actually,
let's be
only referred to as the retarded killer. And so you are like explaining all these. Actually, you have to do it with the Minnesota. He's retarded.
I can't really do it anymore because it's sort of closer to my regular
your
accent.
Chicago accent. Yeah, that's true. But again, like you're telling me all these details, and I'm like, how do you know this? Where did you get this information? Are these in the liner notes? And then when we hit this recap in the third, I was like, oh my God, every film should start with this. Like, he does a marvelous job just recapping like the intent of both films. And it really, like, you know, a lot of things clicked into place for me.
Well, and because for the second movie, Tortured Soul 2, the first 16 minutes, literally 16 minutes, is a recap of part one. So you see that runtime on Tortured Soul 2, go ahead and subtract 16 minutes. And what's great about these are lean. The first one is under an hour. When you subtract the 16-minute recap of part two, it's under an hour.
Yeah.
And then part three is a little over an hour, but it flies by. And that part three, a little over an hour, includes roughly a 10-minute full-on girl-on-girl porn scene.
Yes, with a pornographic actress, and it's great. Avi, great job. So great. Again, let's just start at the beginning.
I want to start with my initial impressions, and that's where I was going, and then we go a million places. I'll have a little sip of that coffee too, Tara.
Oh, you want it in a cup?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Oh, classy.
But so pop this open, Wanda base coat, and right away, I was taken into, like I said, immediately, it's just a girl lying on the floor, full naked, get that full push shot, masturbating. The camcorder here is just full on like a camcorder you'd buy, like a consumer grade camcorder.
VHS.
The other two have a little bit of a different equipment.
Yeah.
This one's just family camcorder quality. So right away it feels skeezy.
Yeah.
The soundtrack is incredible. It basically sounds like a Power Electronics industrial tape. Sounds like it's just like an MS-20 watery synth.
Yeah. I'm actually jealous.
It sounds like eroticism. It sounds like eroticism.
Yeah, it sounds good.
I would listen to this soundtrack on its own. You know, it just sounds like a great late 80s, early 90s industrial PE tape synth. Like, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
So, and it never really changes in this one. It goes into more composition in the other two, but this one is just literally like for the entire movie. It never changes.
Yes.
It's amazing. So already I'm like, ooh, I like this.
This is fantastic.
And you see the guys, you see the killer, our first killer, Steve, just like total, just Midwest metal guy.
Steve's got generally like some sort of metal shirt on with a leather jacket, some sort of denim, looking tough, no mask, very, very manly, you know, sturdy fellow.
Killing these two chicks right away.
So, I mean, but again, I think part of the... Again, just to set the scene, we have the VHS camera. We have the tape that it's taken on. Very, very like
92.
Home video grade. However, you can see things. Like, sometimes things are too dark. You can't see things.
You know, Saturn Square always doing what they can with these, which for so long you never thought that there'd be even any way to really improve on the look of these, but they've done everything they can to make it look, you know, as great as it'll be.
And I love that Mike shared that all of these women, you know, really went into it like consenting, knowing that they would be fully nude, auditioning for their parts, like really, you know, just like going for it. He worked with everybody, like, don't want to do nude? Fine, we'll kill you some other way, whatever. But, you know, we start out with a full nude sprawl. As you know, I like to do when Mike's away. I just lay a
this
big.
This what you do?
That's what I do. I lay a comforter
this
on
is
the
how
ground.
Chicks masturbate.
Well, I was setting.
Oh, I'm just saying this
so,
is.
You have to be so coarse about it. You're making it sound so dirty.
This is tortured soul.
I'm like setting the scene, guy. Like you don't have to like step on my tail.
I apologize.
I like to take a comforter off the bed, like a soft comforter. I like to lay it in the middle of a sunbeam on the floor in the living room, and then I just have a little MS-20 playing, right? You know, I just kind of lay in the middle of the floor and I spread out and I really fiddle with myself and just like think, you know, that's how I like to think. So that's typical, right? You know, maybe I have a friend over and she's in the other room, like taking a shower.
You didn't, and you didn't get
take,
me.
She's doing her own thing. She likes
where
to
am
think
I?
Too. You're away. We only do this when you're away.
What?
This we only just when we leave the door unlocked. So like, you know,
so I could come in
you
at
could
any time.
Come in, you know,
or a murderer though. So
it's like Playboy. It's the anticipation of a man. You just leave the door unlocked. But like that is kind of the opening scene that we get into, and like the virtue of the time that this is being done, you know, it's 90s, but it's also like Midwest 90s is also like late 80s.
92 is still late 80s.
It's still late 80s, right? So we have like big hair, which gives me so much joy. You know, we have comforters that I remember. I swear I clocked like Victoria's Secret lingerie. Like I remember the model in the catalog that was wearing it. Like this one baby doll like nightie that she's wearing. I'm like, Letitia Casta modeled that. I remember it. That was Adriana Lima was in that satin bra. I remember that. Like I remember all of these things. And so really you get that time capsule of the, you know, it's the white bedspread with the purple hydrangeas on it that everybody had, you know. So we have that scene, and then we have a Steve the killer just kind of barge in and start choking and stabbing.
Shooting.
And
he shoots the one. Yeah,
oh, he does shoot them.
Yeah, he uses anything. I mean, he's
you really
killing
get
technique.
A, you get
is,
a whole minutia of apparatuses to kill people, and they're all very mean-spirited. And, you know, he's not holding back on his speech. On the way that he's speaking to his victims.
No, it's pretty great. I mean, it's super mean, nasty. You know, when he's killing the one, he's you fucking cunt.
Yeah,
you get
a lot
it's
of
great,
that.
You know,
you
so
get a lot
it's
of that.
Great. You know, hateful. So it's got a great hateful quality
just like
to it.
When,
right?
When Mike was like, didn't he say like, are my films misogynist? Yes, they are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Just like we talked about.
He's like, they definitely
just
are.
Just like we talked about Russ Meyer last week. That's. You know, look, if we dole out advice here on underground espionage, and our advice for 2026, someone accuses you of something, you just say, yep.
Yes, sure it is. Am. He was like, I guess they are.
It's
they
so
certainly
great.
Are.
It is great, though, and I love that it's no disclaimer, no apology. It's just nasty. And so, yeah, I was immediately just taken to the world of, you know, just nasty power electronics. You know, early just trashy metal guys, but
killing without a reason, just somebody being like, I want to make a movie where there's a killer. And again, Mike was influenced by Ed Gein. He was inspired by Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, he was definitely into serial killers as well as, you know, underground horror, as well as movies like Don't Answer the Phone and Don't Go in the House of Maniac, which were all considered misogynist. So, like, it's all our shit. We love all
this
stuff.
It's all in that family. And I love, too, that he was saying that he liked the idea of Ed Gein, of just normal people who were going about their daily lives and also being murderers.
Yeah,
and
so
he, you know, he kind of displays that in this film.
Tara, Ed Gein, he like really did a lot of sit-ups and had like a V,
really nice one of those,
and he was just plowing
V's.
And he found like an e-girl who was like really into like killers, like what will happen in
Torchwood.
He had
this
Remember?
Amazing like mid-century style.
Remember?
That's just like
Remember like
to
how
keep.
Ryan Murphy
do.
Told us.
Yeah, I remember. But he was inspired. You're a jokester. But he was inspired by that. And so, you know, after we get our initial murder scene, Steve running amok in the it was supposed to be a massage parlor.
Yes,
I think that's why she was laying out on the floor, because she was at work,
I guess,
at the massage parlor. Again, it doesn't matter. Again, sometimes you can't overthink it. You know what I mean? So let's not overthink it.
We're just in the mind of this
but
movie.
Then we get to
we're
go
in
see,
a tortured soul.
But then we get to see this tortured soul, Steve, go to work next. And Mike, What's his job? He's a tree cutter.
I guess he's just clearing branches.
Well, we hear that he's a tree cutter in the synopsis. He does discuss that. But instead, it's just kind of two guys in a lot next to a bunch of houses
Moving branches around. But Tara, actually, before that scene, we get the a kill after the massage parlor where he goes, he just randomly picks a house. And we see our man just watching a porn, and his lady comes in. He's like, hey, come on. Oh, he just gives me a hat.
I love that one. Yeah. The home invasion one. It actually made me kind of sad to see them go. It's like a Hesher couple in their basement. And she's like, what are you watching? And he's like, I'm watching this. It gets me hat.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, and she's like trying to kiss him on the neck. And he's like, hang on a minute. Can you imagine? And she's wearing a little nighty.
Yeah.
And she's just like, come on, baby.
But I want to talk about
their great basement.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about part of what's so great about these movies is these scenes, because as you were saying when we were watching these, one thing you like a lot about shot on video, and especially like the shot on, you know, VHS of the 80s and 90s, is how it feels so authentic and real. And especially there's going to be a great thing in part two where they drive to Pittsburgh, and it just there's this realism and almost and especially with these movies where it's like the houses, the couches, the way they do start to have sex, where it's, there's like a, you know, like that little bit of a play, but it's like sort of awkward because it's real. Yeah. And
they're cassette shelves. They're record shelves.
Well, and then so what we were really honing in on in these is, I mean, look, we are literally surrounded by shelves of CDs, records, tapes, movies, books.
Yeah.
But like I said, I mean, you know, our place is, it's a bit of an organized cast, and in fact, been this week really working on the organized part. But we don't have hoarder piles. They're all on, everything's on shelves.
Yeah.
But it is still.
You don't need a disclaimer. They've probably seen our place.
Tara, I'm setting up.
Yeah, okay, good.
Tara?
I'll allow you.
Keep going. I'm going to, the way we talk sometimes is the way our shelves are, just very unorganized chaos.
Is it a plot that's hard to follow?
But when you watch these movies, the homes are very normal looking and clean, and there's like a normal mirror and a couch and a normal
end table and white walls that have like things on them, but minimally, like one
but then
picture
shelves of records, tapes, and CDs, which you know are all metal, and then like nicely framed posters of like horror movies, and then like a nice cutout of like Nightmare on Elm Street 5. But it's in a way that you would think that these guys, from watching these movies, from the vibe of the movies, that their places would be trashed.
Yes.
That they'd be like beer cans everywhere. Yeah. That there'd be no order.
Stains everywhere. Holes in the wall.
No, these are really, really nice. They look like really nice places, but with just and you just know the insane amount of like metal, vinyl, and you know some great stuff because they've been buying them since when they were coming out. You know the collection.
It's like
incredible.
They're taking care of it. Like they're working hard at their job to buy the things they like, and they're taking care of it. And then in the meantime, they like hanging out and drinking beer and making shot on video. It's awesome.
It's awesome.
So inspiring.
And even like, because I think Kevin K. Smith's place was the house. And
his house always looks so nice. Like he has a house, a brick house, a front door.
And then,
like it's all.
Mike's place is the apartment, but it's obviously in an apartment building, much like one we lived in Michigan, where it's like the sort of complex where there's like a bunch of buildings.
Yes.
And it's right by like a highway. But there's something about it that captures that vibe so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
These movies really do that. It's a snapshot of this time and era. And that's something that shot on video does that other movies can't do. And that's what underground DIY movies do that other movies can't do. It gives you this real look at these people's lives through the lens of making a horror movie.
Their spaces, their real clothes, their real possessions, the things that they actually care about. Like, and it's great. And there's something about, again, the video quality of it, because it does feel like it's almost like a home movie but just they're framing it in the way they would, you know, I mean, want
again,
it to
be. That's what we love about, especially Polonia's stuff. But this has such a trashy, seedier, bottom of the barrel, you know, scumbag vibe in the best way. And you also get to see how Mike likes to make his eggs for breakfast for him and his lady. One perfect over sunny side up egg.
And it's
just in
gorgeous.
The middle of the plate. And it's just one. That's what you eat.
One
you eat
beautiful sunny side up egg.
See, like that
they
to
look
me.
Great though.
That to me is what makes these movies is those. That scene.
Well, he does
the scene
stay
of the
thin,
egg.
So I feel like maybe he only does eat an egg. Maybe he's just watching them cows. I don't
know.
Hey
man.
He looks great.
I like it.
And again, like it's he has a mullet. He has a mustache.
It's amazing.
But it's not in some, like, I don't know. It's not a, it doesn't seem forced.
It
feels
agree,
very
Tara.
Natural.
It,
like, I don't.
It just is. It's
not,
not
like some goofball being like, I'm in college and I'm studying this, but I'm going to have a funny mullet and wear goofball
things
is
just
and
his
have
life.
Ugly glasses because I want to look ugly and I think it's funny.
No, this is just his life. Yeah. Mike is awesome.
Yes,
his
he's
vibe
rad.
Is awesome. Yeah. And yeah, talk about out of so many of the movies we watch, like someone I'd want to hang out with. Like I want to hang with him, like big time. Like I want to like drink beer and listen to like 80s metal with him.
Yes. And he cultivates a type of kind of Chuck Norris aura about him. But
especially by part two.
But you don't begrudge him that. Like I feel like it's a very natural Chuck Norris aura about him. And I really enjoy it.
I want to hang out and look at his horror movie posters, which he shows in one of the extras that look amazing. And he's all real because he talks about getting this stuff when it was coming out because he would go to the video store, and Kevin K. Smith ran a video store, and just the video stores around, and he'd get in there and be like, you know, I'd love any of the posters, any of the promotional
items. Any of the stand-ups.
And he got hooked up with them. So it's like he has all this stuff, and he still has it. It's so sick.
It's great, and feel right at home watching these.
100%.
Yet again, though, I just want to reiterate, like, can't recommend watching this enough if you're into this sort of thing. Right.
Like I said, this may be the crown jewel of Saturn's core.
So you're gonna get again. This is the part one, Torture Soul one. There he was at the slaughterhouse. You do get like at one point I was like, oh, is he gonna pull out like a chicken neck or something like that? But no, it's like giant hunks of spine and lots of really gross meats that are used. And you may not necessarily, without the synopsis, well, now that you've heard this, you know, but you wouldn't otherwise necessarily be able to follow it, but, like, letting it unfold before you is fantastic. Like, you don't need to know exactly what's supposed to be happening at every step of the way. You can just enjoy the chaos of it.
Let it unfold.
You can enjoy the chaotic energy. You can enjoy, you know, two murderous brothers bickering and competing with each other on murdering people. You can enjoy a man who hates cops but also wants to avenge the death of his friends, and you can see the decisions and the reasoning behind, you know, in what they do. Like if you're being pursued by the police, the first thing you should do is pack a bag with like a Wolfman mask, and then hold somebody hostage and go back to her place, and bang
in a waterbed. We do find that out in
all
part
out
two.
Of, oh, and then that's another thing that, you know, we just want to point out is that there are waterbeds in all three.
I think it's the same waterbed, but it is.
And it's
fantastic.
It's the waterbed you're thinking of with the wonderful wooden headboard. And Mike and I had this discussion. Like,
yeah, a lot of talk and thought about waterbeds.
Had to look up if they're still around. My family, I do think, we had this discussion. Mike and I were dating. My parents still had a waterbed. And I think my family, we were like the last holdouts of the waterbed. Now, my brother and my parents had a waterbed even when I went off to college. But I, Mike, had chosen daybed because I liked the like curly Q kind of brass and white. I thought it was very romantic. So I always wanted a daybed.
We banged on that daybed.
And then had like a pop-up trundle bed so you could have friends come over.
We banged on that daybed in my shitty IKEA futon. It's crazy to think about.
I can't believe that.
We are. See, that's the thing.
The daybed was cool because you could like grab the bars of the daybed. Like, oh.
But Tara, so what did you find out about waterbeds? Because I just feel like they I mean, they obviously still do exist, but I've never.
Well, I'll just tell you the reason my family liked them. They said that they were very comfortable. I thought they were bad for your back, but there's mixed reviews as to whether they're bad for your back. But I think the advantage of the waterbed is that you can heat it up. You can have a nice heated bed. Can you imagine getting a nice warm waterbed?
That would be
a
nightmare.
Was it freezing Minnesota winter?
That would be a nightmare.
We get hot.
That would be
a
nightmare.
Hot
a
lot.
We did try
to have an electric blanket once and just too
I haven't
too
seen
hot.
A waterbed in person in...
Since my family.
Yeah, and I don't even recall that.
Yeah.
So I remember in the 80s people had them.
Yeah, well, my parents had the type. So, like, my brother had the wooden headboard type, much like this. Mine went away. I had the wooden headboard. My parents had the type, much like you can get now. And that is, like, it's a mattress, but it looks like a regular bed until you sit on it. Like, it's got hard, like, it's not hard, but, like, kind of foam reinforced sides, so you think it's a regular bed until you sit on it. So it looks totally like a normal bed, but it's a water bed.
I mean, look,
and that would always throw people for a loop.
I mean, I'm definitely curious about it. Does anybody listener
still
have a water bed or have water bed experience? Please let us know.
But they used to always be on leases that you couldn't have them in apartments because, like, can you imagine here? Like, how would we drain and fill a water? Like, if we had to move and we had to drain the water bed, how the hell would we do that?
But
I remember doing it out of the window at home, but, like, now we're like three stories up. Like,
so, look, been a lot of water bed talk, but yes, we're going to get some water bed. Two love scenes on waterbeds.
Yes, but that's the thing we discussed is, like, it looks like it'd be fun to bang on a waterbed. Well, or can you not get leverage?
But that's the thing is,
or
I
is
would
there
wanna,
weird leverage?
I'd almost would prefer to, like, rent a hotel room that has a waterbed and do that.
That
and,
was my solution.
And not necessarily, I feel like sleeping on it would be the movement.
But I feel like waterbed hotel rooms are not nice. I feel like there's not any in California we'd have to be. But in Michigan, when we were there, there were hot tub rooms and waterbed rooms everywhere around Detroit. You could rent a hot tub room.
Well,
there were
hot
tub
gardens. Well,
hot gardens.
Tub room, we did that, but I don't recall
the
waterbed.
And there were hot tub gardens in Detroit.
It was amazing.
And you could rent, like, hot tubs by the hour, and you just go to these, like, tropical themed.
Amazing.
Caveman themed, like, hot tub gardens. But they don't have hot tub gardens here.
That was very cool.
And the water
cool.
bedrooms. But I don't think they have them here. Maybe we have to go up a little north.
I don't know. You know what? It's worth
looking
into.
We go back to
into.
Mount Shasta, maybe. They would have them up there.
Looking into. But, look, so...
I feel like certain positions will be good and certain positions will be bad.
Yeah. I mean, look, I feel like it's worth a try.
Anybody, please let us know.
Well, Tara, what else in Tortured Soul 1 before we move on to Tortured Soul 2? I mean, look, great try. Oh, we do meet Ike, the brother.
Yeah.
The retarded brother who is then the killer moving forward because we find out it's a brother killing team. And Mike needs to go.
Mike has this internal monologue. You're just a loser like your brother.
Steve has it. Oh, that's amazing.
You're a loser like your brother, you worthless piece of shit. You'll never amount to anything. Why don't you go out and make a name for yourself? You're such a loser.
And Tara, do you have similar voices in your head sometimes?
Yeah. I mean, I think mine are meaner.
Right. So we find out that he has a brother and they both, like, hear voices in their head. And when we meet Ike, he's, like, painting a Jason figure, which is so great.
Yeah, but it felt like the McFarlane figurines, and I felt like they were painting them solid colors. Like, he was, like, almost unpainting them to show painting them. Because I swear those were the McFarlane, 12-inch figurines or the 18-inch. But I digress. Yes, he's painting Jason. He has Leatherface in the background. He has all these figurines. And again, that giant, one of the first gifts I got you was that big Leatherface.
I was just thinking, I wish
you
still had it.
Why did we keep it?
I don't know what we did.
We got rid of so many things.
I don't know what we did with it. I do miss that.
It was great.
Yeah,
and then when you walk by, it made chainsaw noises, but then we had to turn it off because it would upset. Yeah. I think we had to hide it because Steve Perry, our dachshund, would want it a lot, and she would beg to play with Leatherface, and we couldn't let her do it all the time. Well, we still have Jason over there. We got little Jason.
But, yeah, so Mike does go over to do some avenging and does kill Steve, and we think he kills Ike. And what sealed the deal and when this watches for the first time and every time since mm-hmm. – is after he kills Steve and Ike. Well, we think he kills Ike.
No.
He calls 911 And he says, "We need a police ambulance over here to 1369 Romero Drive." And I was like, nah, dude.
I love this
1369
dude.
Romero Drive. Oh, like,
that's
you
right.
You are my man, love Mike. I feel seen. And this movie is for us.
And
I
then was, the police immediately descend upon poor Mike. And he said, "I didn't kill no one except the killer.
I didn't kill no one except the killer."
So true. But yeah, so Steve and Ike, we lose Steve, who I really enjoyed Steve.
I
liked
like Steve.
His stompy, mean-spirited killing. We lose him in the first incarnation of Tortured Soul. And we come back into Tortured Soul 2. But you know what? We still have Ike on the loose.
We sure do. 16-minute recap of part one, just in case someone stumbled upon Tortured Soul 2, rented it, and didn't know what happened in Tortured Soul 1.
Yeah, they get a good idea.
We do find out Ike is still alive and kills the ambulance drivers right away. And that's what frees Mike from jail, because it turns out it couldn't have been Mike because he was locked up. And he's like...
Yeah, very Michael Myers. But we haven't discussed Mike, all these Mikes and Ikes and all the whatnot. That Ike, he wears a stocking.
Nylon over his face, that is correct.
But it's got a roach clip on the top, which I found to be a really nice touch.
Yeah,
and that was Kevin's idea.
Yeah.
Kevin, who drank a lot and would kind of go MIA at times and was difficult to film, and then apparently disappeared for a couple of years, then maybe became a born-again Christian.
Yeah,
he
sort of was missing in a bunch of part three. They did these movies together. Mm-hmm. And Nightmare Productions, Gourmet Video, to be clear, is their company. They did a lot. They did a lot of movies. Like I said, that Tales from the Cannibal Side being... one of the very first shot on videos I ever saw. But, you know, you really go from The Swamp and Mind of Death, Cemetery Evil. Those are Michael Johnson's early Super 8 movies. You know, Meat's Meat, A Man's Gotta Eat, which is included on here. Smell of Death, which is included on here. And you know, just really a lot of movies. So they were really going full on DIY.
They were.
Shot on video VHS. And it was both of them together, and he was a big part of it. And he even said in an interview, Michael said that he wouldn't want to continue making movies without Kevin. It was their thing, you know. And so that's why Tortured Soul 3 is the last movie.
And Michael also did those illustrations.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is...
You've got to say, like, the title credits, the words
dude, also,
that are done, and even the illustrations, like, they're
fantastic.
I want
a Tortured Soul 2 poster very
really,
badly. The
really
cover is amazing.
That.
The poster looks
so
amazing.
Good.
I want a Tortured Soul 2 poster. But, you know, you can hear right away that the soundtrack is a little more composed. You can see the video quality is a little better. So you may be saying to yourself... Ooh, is this going to be as trashy? Is this going to be as down and dirty, as scumbaggy as the first one?
Has this classed itself up?
Well, worry not, listeners, because right away you're going to get three dead kids and a grim suicide, and you know you're just fully in it.
And when we say kids, it's like if a little kid, like if a kid was like, "Are there any other little kids here?" You know, if a 7-year-old asked that, that's how old these kids are.
And yeah, you don't see
them. They would be like, yes, there's like a 4-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
Yeah, the cop who had arrested Mike in the first one comes home, and he finds his kids dead. And then he just sits on the toilet
and then
takes
one
a
of
gun
them,
and blows his brains
yeah,
out.
Yeah, and then one of them has a sign that says, "Eat shit, asshole."
Yeah.
Because, and you know why? It doesn't really show the action happening. And I'm sure it was really fun for these kids to like have a machete in their head and the blood. Like, that would have been so fun. But it's because Ike resented the cop for detaining him. And so he had to go waste his children. And then the cop was... riddled with guilt because he didn't believe that Ike was still around. So when he got home and saw him, he shot himself in the head. And I was like, Mike, that's not good, because then they're going to think it's a suicide. And that's exactly what the police thought. It's like me and you, Mike C, and then Mike H are all on the same page here. And then the police are like, we still don't know if he's at large because this might be a murder-suicide, but it's under investigation, much like the monkeys. You know what I mean?
I love it. And so there's a bunch of murders going on, and they think Mike is behind these murders. So his solution to doing that is to run, grab a bag, like you said, grab some stuff,
it
put it in a bag.
It looked like he put a Wolfman mask in it, I'm just saying.
And then
and
go
I was hoping for it
hold
to come
a chick at knife point and basically hold her hostage and make her take him back to her house. That's
but
his
she
solution.
She falls in love with him. And look, she was really cute, wearing a little ditzy floral set out at like a grocery store. He gets in her car, makes her take him back to her house. And, you know, after he explains her story, she starts to really sympathize with him. And so then they decide to have a nice bang sesh.
Right away. And
if you're the writer-director, would you not put a nice bang sesh?
I absolutely would. And like
at a waterbed.
But yeah, so like he literally holds her at knife point, brings her back home, explains what happened very quickly. And she's like, I don't know what it is, but I trust you. And boom,
that
Mike
happens.
And Laura are banging on the waterbed.
Oh, my God. And you wrote down, because I'm reading Mike's notes that he wrote. I did Torture Soul 3. You did 1 and 2. So I was just watching. And you wrote Tara's obsessing over her purse. And you are right. I was obsessing over her purse because, again, we watched Tortured Soul 1 and I was like, these guys seem like regulars at a strip club. You know what I mean? Like, especially here, like, they just seem like these are people that he knew and had them. And, like, that was true in this and in part two. He had been, after the Coca-Cola bottling plant, he had been hanging out at a strip club. And many of the ladies agreed to be in his film. And this lady had, I'm pretty sure it's a Versace bucket bag, which is a really amazing, iconic, like, 90s purse that I'm just like, it would be multiple thousands of dollars today, Mike. Like, just the resale value.
Hey man,
it was like Johnny was still in Versailles. I'm dying over her
classy,
purse. And yes, I was obsessing over it. And I was looking
at
different lady. Versace bucket
she's,
bags
she's
because
great.
It was fantastic.
I got to say, it kind of looks like they might actually be banging in the scene.
It really looks like they're actually banging. Yeah, there wasn't like a... Any way to be like, just make it clear or not. Like, this isn't even like a Jess Franco might be banging. Like, everything's off. Like, it was pretty dead on.
I had a feeling of it.
That is great.
And really, you're kind of hoping you're going to be with Laura as well as Mike the rest of the movie. Sadly, that's not the case.
And
because
she ran her
she
hands
gets
his mullet.
It.
She's great, Laura. Oh, my God.
She
was so
gets
amazing.
Killed by Ike, but you know that just leads Mike to, like, he needs that. He's going to get that revenge.
Been. I wish she was in the whole film. Like, I love, like, that's the thing is, like, the people that they got to star in their films, like, everybody, we don't have time with them all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, everybody could have been the main person that we're following, and I would have been just, like, stoked.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But I really like... So, also in this movie, we have Kira Shawn, who is known mostly and mainly... now she's known for us for being in Torture Soul 2, but she is the little girl that is on many of the covers and the famous little girl picture from the original Night of the Living Dead.
Yes.
And she is in this movie. And they met her when they went out to a 25th anniversary Night of the Living Dead convention in Pittsburgh, which is so cool. Again, like, that's what these guys are doing.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, can we go? Like, and they go and they film at her house and they film this scene and add it to the movie. And we see the drive into Pittsburgh camcorder,
this is
just
absolutely one of my favorite parts of all three of these movies is they drive from Minneapolis to Pittsburgh.
It's rainy.
To film the scene.
It's dreary.
And Mike does this, dialogue over it, a voiceover. Thank you, Jesus Christ. About the drive. He's like, it was getting rain. You know, by the time I got to Chicago, I was halfway there. You know, the scenery of the, Indiana, Ohio is not very exciting, et cetera. But it's like, it really is what it's like driving in the Midwest.
Yeah. And you even see the cones that are omnipresent on the side of the road.
This section of the movie could have gone for like a half hour. Yes. And it's just obviously Kevin Smith filming him from the side, Kevin K. Smith. That is partly why he started using Stephen Castle because of the other director, Kevin Smith, because it's too confusing. But
I'm not confused.
He's filming.
This is my favorite, Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely. He's filming from the passenger seat, so you just get the profile of Mike driving through the Midwest, this voiceover going. I absolutely was so this is like as everything we've discussed so far, this might even be like my favorite part
of this
movie.
He's like brimming with nostalgia.
I love it. And just like this, again, the earnestness of it. That's what we like about this era and these shot on video, these underground, these DIY movies, is the earnestness. Mm-hmm. It is earnest. They're earnestly putting in what their thought, their vision of these movies. It's not a joke. You know, yes, they know that they're not making, you know, The Godfather, yes. You know, but they
I was
are
gonna
working
say
with,
Barry Lyndon.
They're working. There you go. Sure, whatever. They're working within their means, and they're giving all they have in this earnest way. And this drive, to me, sums up what I love about this era of movies, shot on video movies, and specifically the Torture Soul trilogy. I love this part when they're driving to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean they give us everything we want. And it's absolutely appreciated. So, yes, we get the scene from the lady that's on his T-shirt. Like,
yeah,
the
yeah,
way
oh, yeah, because
Ike's
wearing the Night
dreams.
Of Living Dead shirt with her picture on it as he's killing. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I don't know. It's just so amazing. And like, you know, you're rooting for the guys because you're like, wow, they're making their dreams come true. Like, they're making all of these things happen. They're filming on multiple locations. They're doing the road trip. Like, I don't know. There's just like this certain joy when all of these things go down. And line. I was reading your notes and I'm like, the line, you ever been fucked by a knife?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's how he kills Laura. Kills Laura by being like, you've been fucked. Yeah, so sad.
Oh, my God. So
but, yeah,
sad.
Kira Shawn plays Mike's sister, and he knows that Ike's gut wants to kill everyone related to Mike. How does Ike get out to Pittsburgh? We don't know.
We don't have to know. We don't know.
Don't worry about it.
Any of the ways that Ike works. And, I mean, I think at some point I was really, like, contemplating that heavily as, like how does Ike choose his victims? How does he get anywhere? What's his motivation? Like, many times with killers, we see the stalking scene,
yeah,
and we kind of get some idea, especially with, like, Jason, because it's so outlandish. But with Ike, we don't get any of that. Ike just kind of pops up. He's got his roach clip. He's got his pantyhose on. He's ready to go.
And we know he just wants to kill people around Mike, but not even necessarily. He'll just also kill just anyone, really.
But then Ike gives Mike a phone call after, you know,
yeah,
at Ike
after
calls
he found-
Mike's at Mike's sister's home.
Something like that.
Yeah, and he's like, hey. And Mike's like, let's put an end to this.
Yeah.
Let's do it. No knives, man. Just fucking fists. Let's meet up. And then they decide to meet up in the park.
The final fight scene in this movie is so awesome.
It's
love it
very
so much.
Steven Seagal, Chuck Norris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
yeah.
Like, two guys.
Mike's got
a park.
Headband on, some short cutoff jean shorts.
They got to duke it out. I'm so glad he chose denim shorts.
I love this fight scene.
Yeah. And it's a fantastic, you know, they're going to fight to the death because they need to put an end to it. You know, all the killing, it's enough. He's, you know, taken out everybody that's important to Mike. Ike needs to avenge his brother's death, or the voice in his head will never shut up. Steve won't shut up in his head. And so we have a fantastic final fight scene where they roll down a hill into a creek.
Yeah, and, you know, of course Ike's not going to play fair. He does bring a knife, like a fish fillet knife.
Yeah, it looks like a fillet knife.
carving up Mike, cuts his ear off.
Cuts his ear off, that's right.
But Mike has the final say, drowns Ike, and then we cut to a hospital. Where Mike's in his ear sewed back on.
Yeah, we cut to surgery footage where, like, somebody's scalp's being sewn back shut. Yeah, it's
like
looks
like
it honestly looked kind of more like a facelift.
No, but it looks like everything's going to be okay. Except Mike wakes up and there's a man in a surgical mask with a chainsaw.
No!
And it's like, and he chainsaws at him, blood everywhere. And that is the end of Torture Soul 2. And Tara, you said when it's happening, oh, I bet this is going to be a dream. And then when the credits roll, you're like, oh, I guess it wasn't a dream. I go, hey, we may have never known, except, Tara, they did make Tortured Soul.
And thank goodness they did, because it cleared up a lot of confusion.
So Torture Soul 3 comes, they started doing this in the early 2000s. So it's actually a bit later. Torture Soul 2 is 94. And they started filming Torture Soul 3 in about 2001. It comes out in 2004. So it comes out almost 10 years later.
Wow.
And now we got Mike working at a hotel. That's why the opening, the hospital is clearly a hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
That's
great.
But what makes this one stand out is that it stars one Miss Stephanie Beaton.
God.
A shot on video scream queen from the 90s. And Tara, I told you, and I think I mentioned in a few episodes ago, that another movie I have base coded for us that we will be doing an episode on for sure this year is The Evil Maker, starring Stephanie Beaton. Mm-hmm. And that movie excels because of her and her presence. And, yeah, you know, let's face it, how hot she is.
Yes, she's amazing.
And this one as well, because every time she's on screen, you're like, give me that, as Mike calls her, either in the commentary or the interview, a voluptuous redhead. And guess what? I like a voluptuous redhead.
Well, you know, it's as Torture Soul 3, The Willing Flesh, you know, as we kick off and we're doing the recap, I'm thinking in my head, like, you know, I haven't really taken time to appreciate the great acting performance, the great performance from Mike thus far, right? Like, you know, there's some fun performances from the actors in the film, but I'm like, you know what? No, like, he's legitimately, like, invested. I like the delivery of his lines. Like, he's great. But then we also get, I was like, best actor in this film series. But then we get Stephanie Beaton, and I'm like, ah, shit. Like, she is so good. Like, I love the style of her delivery. I like her energy. Like, she really just livens up the screen and makes me really happy anytime I get to watch her.
I like that they really
line.
Also, you know, predicted the future of chicks being obsessed with serial killers.
Yeah, she's supposed to be Mike's neighbor who finds out he's living there, and she wants to go meet him because she loves serial
killers.
And
I mean, it was really started, the serial killer stuff obviously was started heavily in the 90s. You know, I mean, obviously growing up then, clearly, that's when I got into the stuff. Same. And, you know, that's when it all really went underway. And, you know, one thing to note, too, a big reason, you know, a big push for Torture Soul 2 and then Torture Soul 3 was a review in Film Threat magazine of the first movie. There was a scathing review, and it ended with the line, God forbid Tortured Soul 2. And all that did was make people want to see Torture Soul 1, and then all it did was make them want to make Torture Soul 2. God forbid Tortured Soul 2.
And they only made this, the first film, just to, like, show at their Halloween party.
As you,
like,
said, we just made it for their buddies.
Didn't even want to, like, sell copies, do anything. Just, like, made it really for his, like, buddies to, like, yeah, to, like, show at their Halloween party.
And then throughout the 90s, again, that's when they were really going strong. They made another one with 70 Beatons in it called Dying to Meet You. That's when Tales from the Cannibal Sides made, which she's mm-hmm. also in. And then now we have Torture Soul 3, which, again, you're like, you know, for the second one, it seemed like maybe they got a little better at editing. They started composing music, but you're still full on trash. Part three, like, man, are they really gonna class things up by part three? Are they really just getting classier and classier as we go? Guess what? We'll be okay.
Yeah, this is, like, it's also very fever dreamish because sometimes you forget what you're watching. But Stephanie Beaton's character is a student over at Craven College.
Of course, right? You know, gotta love it, right?
Craven, gotta do it.
Guess what? I'm craving Stephanie
Beaton. Craving Stephanie Beaton. And then Mike's mullet is really, really, like, it's kind of a Hogan-style mullet at this point. It's very silky.
Definitely got some Hogan vibes going on.
He's got a real Hogan vibe that I'm really, really love this. And let me think what else we need to say. So Stephanie Beaton needs to go impress her alleged serial killer neighbor. So what does she grab in her basement when she's doing laundry in her basement, which makes me want a basement as well. God, I miss basements. She grabs a little spaghetti strap red dress and some Pleaser USA shoes. Again, all perfect of these things, I'm like, I know the catalog these things came from. It's destroying me.
Well, and we first meet her, she's reading Deviant, the Ed Gein book. You know, so right away,
yes,
we're like, here,
yes,
we go. I'm loving this. Yeah, brings over a nice little sexy strappy little number over to Mike's to talk about what it's like to have killed. Because, you know, even though he's not the killer, he did kill the killer. He didn't kill, yes, no one except the killer.
And then he seduces.
Oh,
you know,
Stephanie
Beaton,
dude,
by
Mike,
why don't you just lie back and pretend I'm the killer and I'm gonna have my way with you?
Hell yeah, you know Mike's getting it. Mike did it with Laura, and Mike's doing it with Stephanie Beaton. Vanessa is her character's name, and man, Mike just, you know, he's my guy, dude. He just is, like, getting it and getting it with these chicks.
I did note that while you were watching the scene, Mike, you said, this Mike, my Mike said, oh damn, I would bust during that scene.
Yeah, when they were, because obviously Stephanie's a professional, and we know this is certainly not, this is simulated. But yeah, I would definitely bust. Like, I don't think I can hold it. Yeah,
I don't think I can. You can think you can handle it. Well, you know what? That shows what a professional the other Mike is, Mike. That's why. That's why he's the professional, and you are not. And then we have a scene with three gals just hanging out at their apartment playing truth or dare.
Yeah, a little slumber party action.
Just daring and truthing and flirting with each other. Pulling their tits out. And doing laundry. And yeah, I mean, that's what I do in truth or dare. But my favorite part of the scene, too, is the exceptionally loud hum that is present.
There are some loud hums in a few of these scenes, and I wonder if it's just the cameras picking up like air conditioning sounds or something. There is a nice loud hum going on.
This scene especially, it's the loudest of hums. I was like, they have a window unit going on? Like, I don't know what's happening. But really, like, these are three that they found. What was the name of the paper? That
City
they
Pages.
I think they said that they got these three ladies from City Pages, and they were all excited about the film. And I'm excited about all three of them. They were all fantastic, and they could have each had their own film. But definitely the ditzy floral dress with the laces from the Victoria's Secret catalog is present. And then I had to say that Tortured Soul 3 has the most boobs yet. There are so many.
So many
breasts.
This ups the ante of tits. And don't worry, you're going to get pussy too. And you're going to get
a lot of it.
You're going to get some finger insertion.
A full scene. Now, when we were starting Tortured Soul 3, I was like, Mike Connolly, this credit scene is long. And he was like, well, yes, it is, Tara. I hadn't noticed. And you know why it's so long?
Because there's so many people.
I just gave up. You can't know their names. You can't know what they're doing. It's another one of those things where you just like kind of like let it happen. Well,
and
before
it's definitely
you
just
because it's
characters
just
introduced just to be killed for murder scenes. And Tara, what about the one chick, the college chick with that total early 2000s hair?
I had a friend named Tara who had that haircut. It's that really, really short wedge haircut. And it's like straight and longer in the front, and real short in the back. There's a cute way to do it and uncute. She had it real cute way.
With the thin eyebrows
and then the little black skirt that everybody had with that little slit in it, like the black mini skirt. And you wore it with like a little tank top.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was amazing. I love that scene. She was such a statement. Like the whole look, the whole everything. I loved her so much. Yes. And then we have a lot of synth going on, and the synth is back for this entire.
The synth is a little more closer to the first movie. It's a little more industrial power electronic synth. I like it a lot. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we get a really great suspenseful synth that they're doing. But the other thing that happens in this, other than the amazing basement scene that we get to see, other than Mike wearing his rainbow bar and grill shirt for most of the time.
Love it. Makes me want to go. It's been a minute since we've been.
We get a pool.
Yes, we do get a pool, which was provided by a photographer, Lou. I can't remember his last name, just fell out of my head. But he's procured some of the ladies, including A.V. Scott, and the house with the pool.
And he may be living in our very city now, doing smutty photographs for.
Sounds great.
You know, I don't know who.
Yeah.
Wonderful people. But yes, so he procured the house with the pool.
Where's his house?
Oh, yeah, where we get some great scenes, such as a lady and her boyfriend sneaking into a pool. And what do you do if you forgot your trunks? You just watch your lady swimming around.
Yeah. And she looks good swimming around. And she's got a good death scene where she falls back into the pool after getting slashed in the throat by old Ike. Or is it Ike?
She didn't notice him getting on that diving board, but she did great at like falling backwards into the pool with the makeup, holding still, not sinking, but also not moving. Like, she was really good. I couldn't do that. I would be like I would get like water in my eyes or something, and I'd be like, ah, my contacts. Like, it would be bad. Like, she was awesome. And I think that you're right, Mike. It's more challenging than you think. And like, you know, probably not a lot of takes on that.
Probably not. But after the scene, we get One of the other great gifts that Tortured Soul trilogy, and particularly Tortured Soul 3, has given us is the gift of getting to look for more movies featuring A.V. Scott.
That's true.
Because she is hot, and she is a porn actress. She's listed as A.V. Summers in the credits, but
she has beautiful square French tips in this film.
She looks great.
I mean, you know, it's just a couple of ladies, like, in maybe sometimes you have the old blue star tan through swimsuit that they used to sell. Maybe, you know, if you're A.V., you don't want to get too much sun. You want to go inside, get in the hot tub. And, you know, once you're alone, what else are you going to do? You got to, like, you know, entertain yourself somehow.
You got to spread open and shove your fingers in.
Yeah, that's
exactly
right.
What these ladies are doing. And again, when you're watching this, and again, you having seen the first two, you know that, okay, this is par for the course of these guys. You know, there's going to be some, you know, some titillating scenes, but you don't necessarily expect a full-on
porn scene. Now, but neither, and Mike, the other Mike, alleges that he didn't really expect it either. He just kind of let it happen.
Yeah, he says it wasn't planned necessarily, but I think between A.V. Scott having done it and between Lou, it was the shooting, it was just Mike, Lou, A.V., and Kat Cirth was the other chick. I think it just sort of happened, and A.V. was obviously down, and Kat was kind of down. Like, if you guys just want to keep going, let's go. And I would say the only thing is you kind of wish that maybe he was a little more skilled at filming this, because sometimes the angles you'd like to see a little, you know, get in there a little bit. I'd like to see what's going on.
He got some really good shots.
He got a great ass shot. Yes. That is a fantastic shot.
Well, and I was worried. They're both blonde, and I was worried about them getting too much chlorine in their hair, which, Mike, that's... But this, really dangerous. It'll turn a green. It'll fry your hair.
But this scene really definitely takes up a big chunk of the movie. I mean, it does. I didn't time it. I should have. But, I mean, it goes for a while.
Well, we were... Okay, so I can kind of... We can guess because we're 47 minutes in. Because I was clocking it, like, you know, kind of just watching. And then I'm like, wait, we're 47 minutes deep into a film. And I'm just like, where are we? What are we doing?
Right, that's...
What's supposed to be happening? What am I
watching?
Which
is a beautiful place to be when watching these movies.
I forgot what I'm supposed to be like, you know. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like in Up when you're like, oh, yeah, this is a murder mystery.
Exactly.
This is a murder mystery? Are you sure this is a murder mystery?
I love that. I love that, especially when you get lulled into these movies. And you're like, oh, yeah, wait, I'm watching Tortured Soul 3, not like a porn.
Yeah, and then... But, like, then A.V.'s lover's like, let me go get us some soda waters. And so she goes into the kitchen and is murdered so brutally on the linoleum floor. Yeah.
And
so
then
sad.
A.V. gets killed in the hot tub. And I love her death scene's great. She's just lying there with her eyes closed, her tits out. Just kind of just lolly, you know, she's just in that cummed out days.
Yeah, she's just relaxing in a hot tub.
Yeah.
I think is what you could have just said. She's relaxing in a hot tub. She's relaxing
nude in a hot tub. We're going to button up and get classy now this deep.
She's relaxing in a hot tub, darling.
This deep into Tortured Soul Trilogy podcast.
And then some guy in denim and a stocking, like, jumps in and yanks her under. And, like, this is where I was thinking, like, how brave A.V. is. Because, I mean... Look, I was thinking I would not trust amateurs to fake drown me in a hot tub.
Well, look, as we talked about
I'd be
Up,
reluctant.
As we talked about in Up last week, I mean, Raven De La Croix was getting drowned in that lake.
She was, like, legit getting drowned. But, like, I mean, I guess some might say, like, A.V.'s allowed people to do other things and has to have a certain gauge of trust for other things that she does. But the drowning in a hot tub scene, I would say, wow, amazing on her part that she did this. Because
but to me,
they were fake drowning her.
To me, that's also what makes these movies so great, because there is that element of reality
because
and actual
all like,
danger.
Is this guy going to actually drown?
Yeah, that's what makes these movies so great.
Yeah.
Is that that reality element?
Yeah. So it's really true. So then, you know, that is over. AV's gone. We're snapped back into reality where we're like, oh. Yeah,
these murders all really have nothing to do with Mike, because he's not related to these.
We don't know how
really.
Ike got there. We don't know what.
Oh,
or if it
oh,
even
no,
is
no, no.
Ike.
Oh, and what I actually realized on maybe the third watch, which I had not realized before, is Kat Cirth, the blonde chick, she's Stephanie Beaton's roommate that you see in the beginning.
Oh, that's
so
right.
That is the relation.
She had said she was going away with her friend for the weekend.
I forgot.
Oh, man.
I actually didn't clock that until like the third
watch.
But
there were so many like blondes with straight hair. I didn't recognize her. Yeah. There were.
Yeah. I just and I remembered
good
to bring
eye.
That up.
Good
I know,
eye.
I know.
Man. Okay. It all makes sense. But
we get back to Stephanie. We get her to take a we get to see her take a shower, which is fantastic.
No, we get to see her put something on the stove.
Yeah, and then take a shower, which is heat. Now is that what you
something
do?
Up on? Yes, you put like a kettle on the stove, you put it on the burner, and then you hop into the shower.
Makes a lot of sense. And
and then you know what though? So you hop in the shower, and then we get the flashy scenes.
So look, you heard us discuss Murder Rock, our critiques about Murder Rock is the amount of flashing that goes on in Murder Rock. And again, you know, I know everything on Earth now has the warning of flashing lights. I don't think it's in any way warranted in 99.9999%
yes.
of movies. I think it's warranted in Murder Rock, and I think it would be warranted in Torture Soul
yes.
3.
Yeah, we're telling you now, do not be hungover when you
we
watch
weren't.
This.
Hey, everybody, we weren't. Can you believe it?
Oh
we
my
weren't.
Goodness.
We were
good for
absolutely.
Us. I'm not hungover now. Wasn't
no,
hungover
look
then.
At us. Look at us patting ourselves on the back.
Sharp
but
as a
something about this
stick.
Lo-fi-ness of this flashing is even more nauseating, to be honest. And it is. I remember watching it. I'm like, oh shit.
It's just a constant
it's
flashing.
Rough.
Is there something
it's
about.
Rough.
Because it's a literal strobe light. Like sometimes the
which
flashing scenes
more,
are flashing
which
lights.
I've gotten far more used to. I used to have a bigger version. Now I'm like sort of fine with strobe
but
lights.
A strobe light
this
with
is
a VHS camera.
It's tough.
For a prolonged period of time,
yeah.
It's pretty
but what
rough.
We start to
it's
find out in this scene is that Mike, it almost turns out, is like he ties up Stephanie. And we see that it's Mike. It's not Ike. It's Mike.
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to think like a killer. And then he looks like he's going to, you know, he's doing it to really bang Stephanie, get her
yeah.
all hot and excited. But what does she do, Tara?
She grabs a bottle. Grabs a bottle, smashes it over his head, grabs a thermos, smashes it into his face, grabs the boiling water, throws it into his face. She's really going to do like a final girl run sequence.
And her stabbing of him and the scene of her, I love the way she looks when she's stabbing. She's got her shirt off.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. So then at the end, there's a little tussle. We don't know if Mike was like not going to kill her, then decided to kill her or what happened. But what we do know is that it ends with Stephanie Beaton kneeling on his chest, topless, while stabbing him multiple times. Cut to a cemetery scene by a strip mall.
Yeah, she stabs the cop who comes in.
Yeah. Then and then the cop hugs her, and she's like, oh, my God. He's like, are you okay? And
then
she's hugging him, and she stabs the cop. That's right.
Cuts to a cemetery, like a Carrie ending. She goes to Mike's grave, but a hand reaches up, grabs her. Cut to her in a straitjacket, freaking out. Love her doing this. Mm-hmm. Cut to Mike coming out. Wait, Mike's alive? Wait. Now we see Mike by a creek. What is he pulling out of his jacket? A nylon? Wait a minute.
With a roach clip on it?
Mike's been the killer all of Torture Soul 3. Not Ike.
But Mike, I had so many questions. I don't know if that's true because the cop said they never found Ike's body and they don't know that Ike was never found. So what if it was Mike and Ike the entire time? I don't know. I don't know. But we'll never know until there's a Tortured Soul 4. And that's why in my notes I was like, I'm going to need another synopsis. I'm going to need a Tortured Soul 4 to help me out.
God forbid Tortured Soul 4. Well, we end with a final shot of Stephanie in the asylum. Cut to a great
rock music.
Great metal song. Mesmerize. Great song. And there we have it. The Tortured Soul trilogy. Yeah. God forbid Tortured Soul 4. Hey, God forbid Michael W. Johnson come on this podcast. We want to interview you. Shooting that out there. Stephanie
yes.
Beaton. We want to interview
yes.
Shooting that out there.
Yeah.
Putting that out in the world.
Yes.
Tortured Soul 2 poster, come into my life, please. We want to shoot
how
that
do I obtain this item?
And again, just look, there's Saturn's Core. It's such an incredible label because it shows the range of DIY underground movies from the Wave Productions, which are obviously in so many ways that is the true jewels of Saturn's Core. But yeah. Then you get something like this, and it's just everything you want from Shauna Video. And man, I'll shoot this out there too. I'm shooting things out there.
Oh, whoa! You're just shooting a lot of shots, my
son. Let's get some Tales from the Candle Side. Let's get more Nightmare Gourmet videos on Blu-ray. Let's get more Michael Johnson movies out to the world because we are floored by these.
And they don't commit the crime of being boring. And I think that is
not even close.
You know, like maybe you're unclear as to who someone is or what's going on at times. But you're never not entertained.
These are by far some of the most entertaining shot on video movies I've ever seen. Again, what I was trying to say with Saturn's Core is the gamut of movies like this, to strange experimental stuff, to maybe slower, more drawn out ones, but done DIY shot on video. Yeah. And I like those. I like being lulled into the strange world of certain underground shot on video movies. These zip by
fast,
full sex, full gore. They look great. They feel great. You just want to hang out with these people. The vibe of them, the Midwest metal vibe, beer, drinking beers, loving horror, loving metal, and just going out there to make movies because that's what they want to do because of their love of these things, because it's just what they had to do, the drive, that underground DIY drive. This is what we live for.
Yeah.
These,
they wanted something to show at their Halloween party to their friends.
Tortured Soul Trilogy is the type of thing we live for. And yeah, the Blu-ray comes with an incredible booklet, thick, multiple interviews, multiple essays. This is just truly one of the greatest discs of Saturn's Core, one of the greatest discs we now own, one of the greatest. Just, I just love that this is in our life now.
Yeah.
I love that we are 100%. we are in the world of Tortured Soul. So thank you, Michael Johnson. Thank you, Kevin K. Smith, aka Stephen Castle, and thank you, Saturn's Core, of course, again, for killing it. Oh man.
But this would be perfect to throw on at a party.
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
It'd be great to throw on like a DJ night.
Anything.
Throw it on at a bar. Anytime. Group of people.
It'd be great to just throw on again.
Right
and
now.
Again and again. Well, incredible. What a fun discussion, Tara. Like I said, next week, looking at having an interview for the episode. So look out for that. And in the meantime, watch Tortured Soul Trilogy. All right, everybody, thank you so much for the support. We will talk to you next week.
Thank you.